Welcome to Corona Chronicles. We are approaching the end of the Book of Revelation, and we are in chapter 21. There are glorious things in this chapter and the next chapter, and we've spent a lot of time and a lot of important time, necessary time, looking at judgment and our need to prepare for judgment. But we're coming on to the other side of the Great White Throne now, and you know, we're going to slow down a little bit in these chapters just to get all the goodness out of them, and we're going to do the first three verses of Revelation 21. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Now the dwelling of God is with men, and he will live with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God."
These are, next two chapters are just so full, we're going to have to go quite slow in them,
yeah,
because they're so beautiful. And again, they're a sort of summary of the whole of what God is about. You know, in fact, wanting to dwell with people. We've gone from one garden, haven't we, where God created Eden and walked with Adam and Eve in the cool of the day, or at least Adam in the cool of the day, that fellowship in the garden, dwelling together, to now we're coming back into this garden city where God dwells. But I think what is interesting is, in one sense, this is not a picture of heaven, of the new creation, even though verse 1 says, you know, he's seeing this, but it goes on really to be a picture of us, God's people in heaven, isn't it? And we're explained. I mean, it's strange, isn't it? Because in verse 2 it says, "I saw the city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God." You think, okay, there's a city.
Yeah.
And then prepared as a bride.
Yeah.
Beautifully dressed for her husband.
Yeah.
So either the angel is sort of lying. he says, "I'm going to show you the city, and then you see the bride," or the bride is the city, and the city is the bride, which is obvious. But most brides wouldn't like to be called a city, would they? I
mean, no.
If you said, "Gosh, she looks like a city,"
as she
comes down the aisle,
broad as a brick house. No, but as you say, these are mixing images for the church that we find in the rest of the Bible. So, you know, we are described as the temple of God, and that Christians are living stones that are being built together around the chief cornerstone, Jesus. So city and building imagery is used at the church, and that's something that God is constructing around his son. But then the bride is a really lovely image as well, isn't it? From the Bible, you get it in Song of Solomon and Ephesians, and it's a picture of the uttermost intimacy, isn't it? The love and the covenant that exists between us and our God. So we are his people, and we're coming for our great, great wedding day. And I think, as you said just now, you know, this idea that we're not seeing heaven in a sense, we are seeing the new creation, aren't we? This is a new heaven and a new earth. And lots of people still have a very, you know, a very impoverished understanding of heaven, just as a kind of spiritual world. And, you know, it's going to be very boring and very unreal. But actually, C.S. Lewis was on the mark, wasn't he? When he said that this world is the Shadowlands, you know. So when you look at an oak tree in this world, however beautiful it is, it's only a shadow of what an oak tree will really look like. You know, everything will be more real and more colourful and more bright and more engaging and than ever. So that's what we're seeing tied up in this as well.
Yeah, in comparison to the city of Babylon,
which is
a haunt, we were saying.
Yeah.
You know, it's less than it was.
Mm.
This is more than we could ever imagine, and amazing. And an amazing thing that it's a city where God dwells, and yet this is the bride. So there's this intimacy of the dwelling of God with his people, and we dwelling with him.
Mm.
And the sort of prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. There's no shame there. There's no, "Oh, I'm a bit poor." There's no, I didn't do all the righteous acts I wish I had. There's no, you know, it is a glorious bride in the presence of an even more glorious husband dwelling with God.
And that, that is what makes heaven or the new creation, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, the fact that we will dwell with God, yes, and God will dwell with us. Yes. So, you know, everybody would desire heaven if it was just being reunited with the things I liked, yes, in this life. But that is not the heartbeat of
the world. No, I mean, the heaven at the end of Gladiator, that film, yeah, is him running through a cornfield,
yeah,
with his dog and his wife running, yeah, the other way. And that's what people think heaven is, eternally, yeah, sort of sentimental, nice things.
Yeah.
But it's God.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's, I mean, even as far as I understand, the Quranic Muslim, mm, heaven,
mm,
it's without God, yeah, isn't, yeah, it? Yeah. Allah's not really there. It's,
yeah,
it's the things that you get from him.
Yeah.
But it's not the things we get from him so much as him.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And the psalmist talk about that, you know, in your presence is fullness of joy, at your right hand the pleasures forevermore. So it's in the presence of God that we find fullness of joy.
Yeah.
And this is the answer to the Bible's big question, because in Eden, as you mentioned, you know, we were dwelling with God, we were walking with him, but there was an expulsion, there was death. And then the big question of the Bible from then on is, who can ascend the mountain of the Lord? Mm. Who can come and dwell with him again? Yeah. Well, only Jesus and us in Jesus.
Yeah.
We can come and dwell with him again.
And he's the bridegroom, so, and we're the bride.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, but there's one thing that people sort of pick on in this little bit of passage that seems to stir them up. And that it says that there is no sea. Mm. I actually can't see where that verse is.
Verse 1, end of verse 1.
End of, yeah, verse 1, yeah.
Yeah, and that is hard, because I think any of us who have been to the seaside and have stood on the cliffs or on the beach and looked out over the sea, there were very few scenes that are more awe-inspiring, more humbling and more beautiful than watching and listening to the ocean. So the idea of a new world without that would feel lacking in glory in some way. And I personally think the sea in that form will be there. But what it stands for in the Bible is actually a place of darkness and hostility and destruction and death and something that can't be tamed, something that's unruly. You know, so when Jesus calms the storm, you know, he's not preaching against wind and waves. He's showing an authority over evil, even in that case. So this is the removal of things that are hostile, I think, to God.
Yeah,
to,
well, people. I mean, often, yeah, a raging sea stands, yeah, for satanic activities,
yeah,
and the evil of violence of mankind.
Yeah.
So that's what it's, yeah, saying, isn't it? Because we know that there's a glassy sea
on, yeah,
in another, yeah, occasion around. So,
yeah,
you know, these are, again, we've got to remember, these are imageries. I mean, how do you describe something that is so much more beautiful than we can imagine?
Yeah.
You have to use sort of words and images that we know.
Yeah.
Because these are shadowy, yeah, and there's the reality to come, as you, yeah, say. Okay, well, it's an amazing passage. It's talking about the intimacy of God and his people, husband and wife, and that picture of dwelling. We'll carry on these wonderful truths next time. Mm-hmm.